Good morning. Today is Thursday, July the 21st, 2016. It's 9 a.m. This is Josephine County Board of Commissioners Administration Workshop. Commissioner Heck is not with us today, but we have Commissioner Hare and myself. And the first agenda item is the reading ordinance imposing a tax on the sale of retail marijuana and retail products. And we have Pat. Good morning.
Hi.
They sent you in here by yourself?
I know. They're not here. I figured it'd be very fast.
Yeah, it needs to come up. You're here, and you're listed in 5.05.
Yeah, okay.
And 6.01. And
Yeah, in the ordinance. I was just wondering if there was any changes from the last time we talked. That's why I was just up
here.
Did you, Commissioner Walker?
I didn't see any changes.
Okay.
As far as, particularly in your section, that's the same as it was in the previous one. That 505 is the same. And
the biggest change we made was in the very first, right before section one, it says the people, the jurisdiction.
The definition.
Right above section one.
Yeah.
They used to say the board ordains, and now it says the people. Because it's
I just thought that was a different one.
Okay.
Yeah, they're voting on it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That's right on the charter.
The reading?
Next Wednesday.
If we move it today, it's next Wednesday. If we actually, this is getting close to the...
It's already noticed.
So.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay. There were no changes. Our last iteration. Shall we move this forward, Commissioner?
Yes.
Yeah? Okay.
Sounds good.
Move it forward to the admin. Okay. Anything else? Legal? No, thank you.
Is your conservation project coming?
I don't know. We'll have to check. I'll find
Paulie
out.
Paulie assured us that you have something by the end of the month.
I know.
Right.
Which is kind of the point on that. I'll ask you to check with the folks up in Seattle.
I would appreciate that. You guys had a draft of it.
What's he done?
Yeah, I came over a long time ago. I thought I remember seeing how it was all being laid out,
mm-hmm.
and it was great.
It was very readable.
Mm-hmm. Reference. So
yeah,
I'll just come over whenever, so, or pop up to feature. Where is it?
I'll find out where the file is.
Okay. Cool. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. And we'd like to have that sitting.
Wait a second, is legal's handling this issue? I mean, it's not confidential. It's not. It has to do with rock and soil, and we've all been getting calls. I'm pretty sure. And you haven't had any calls. I've been referring people to you because she's the liaison to planning and code enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
But they've been calling. I know they've been calling Commissioner Heck, and they've been calling me.
When you say rock and soil, what does that refer to?
It's a business out in the Illinois Valley.
Oh.
So we've discussed it as a board before. If legal is involved in this, we need some sort of coordinated report on what we can do. And it's really through Julie Schmelzer that you guys are, so that you can do this, you can't do that.
Okay.
That would be really helpful, because I'm getting calls. And I don't know what's going on from an enforcement. If there's a letter being sent, or I heard that there was a deadline of the 23rd or something, a letter that went out, and the people that I talked to said you don't know about that, and I said no.
I don't know what they're talking. What you're talking about,
Commissioner Walker, 100% know. If anybody on the board knows, she should know.
I don't know what you're talking about. A company called Rock and Soil.
Yeah, it's a business in the Illinois Valley, right outside the city limits, next to Jubilee Park, that distributes, that mixes soil
I remember a discussion some time ago, but I've had nothing recently.
Yeah, so I've gotten two calls this week. I know that they had talked to Commissioner Hackett, and I referred all of them to Julie Smeltzer and Commissioner Walker.
They may be calling Julie, but I have not received
deadline came out of our office.
Okay.
But I'll check it out.
All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I remember we had a discussion some time ago about something near Jubilee Park. I remember probably 3 or 4 months ago, maybe, but I've not received any phone calls recently.
Okay.
Nothing. Okay. Okay, department update. Committee questions. Mr. Byron.
Hey. Thank you, Commissioners, for having me today. I apologize for the redundancy. This was originally presented in January and then signed by the board on February 24th. Once it was signed by all the parties that needed to be, have the signature, we sent it up to ODOT. They made some minor adjustments and requested us to run it through the process again. So there's very few changes to this particular contract. And it is with ODOT, so it's to authorize the board to sign a flexible service maintenance agreement between the State of Oregon Department of Transportation and Josephine County Community Corrections for work crew services for the period of 2016 through 2025. So it's roughly 10 years.
They just changed the date? Is that what they changed?
Yeah, they changed the date, and it's basically an extension of the contract. But it's per day for $400. They're also aware that we're going to raise that rate. So they're in agreement with that as well. That's in the contract. So.
Great. Okay.
It looks fine, and there's an ability to amend it if necessary in the future. So it's just a kind of a nice thing to have out there because there's hasn't been in the last year or two stability with your work crew funding wise, and to have that one kind of shored up, that one's kind of in the queue. That's fine. I think it does raise one of those issues of why we like to have, because it's easier for every other agency probably in the state, other than the state legislature, to sign something than the Board of Commissioners because of the process we have. So that just makes a sense why we get everybody else to sign before we do. But I'm happy to approve this now.
That's what I was going to say. Let's just go ahead and do it.
It's just kind of a housekeeping issue as opposed to really a setting policy or establishing a contract. So I'd make a motion to approve the ordinance bill.
It's maintenance agreement number 31140.
Maintenance agreement number 31140 between Josephine County Community Corrections and State of Oregon.
I second the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. And we will sign it right now.
Motion carries.
Motion carries.
Perfect.
Thank you. I'll get it signed and over to you.
Okay. Cool. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Have a great day.
And you left your business already?
Yes, you have.
Okay, great. We'll sign and get a tape.
Great. Thank you, Commissioner.
Mm-hmm. You're getting
welcome.
A new report, too.
Oh, yeah.
We're happy you
didn't come. Oh, I didn't know that.
Awesome.
Awesome.
You didn't know that?
No. But
I'm sure
other people did.
Brian does, and I'll ask him to follow up with you if there's going to be any inconveniences, because I know that there's a lot of structural stuff. We're going to get all that fixed.
Great. Thank you very much.
Bye, Dorian.
It's going to be the duel between the big bus and the big truck.
Right.
Okay. Mr. Chan. Transit. Good morning.
This is my quarter report. It was supposed to be last week, but I had a meeting at a conference with ODOT that I volunteered for, so I didn't realize that is conflicting.
Like the last time you were here, you needed something, and you kind of almost gave a report in and of itself because it was like that 3-year report or something, and it was talking about the things that you didn't think. Anyway, if you were just here for
a report. It seems like I was.
Yeah.
I'll be here next week, too, because we have grant agreements.
Well, not that we mind seeing you.
Well, thank you. The first item up is the enhancement project. Our funding for the transit hub was funded. I was pretty happy about that. Yes, so it was our project, ODOT's project, surprisingly. And the reason our project was reduced by $180,000 was to allow for vehicle purchases for Coos Curry Transit. and they have an enhancement project for three vehicles, and so their $180,000 funded them for two, and I was willing to give that up knowing the situation that they are in. And that's basically, they run service between Smith River, California, all the way up to Coos Bay.
It's crazy. Their territory is so long.
I know, and their vehicles take a beating, so I was willing to do that.
So what is the grant then?
So the grant ended up coming in approximately, I don't remember the exact figures for Coos Curry, but I expect $872,000 for our project.
For this project over here?
Yes. And
we have a county contribution.
Yes, that's the local match, and that will be included in that as well. Public Works Engineering actually scoped my own project for me, and they figured it was going to cost $708,000. ODOT scoped it themselves, and they figured it was going to be $1.05 million. So the fact that they funded us over what Public Works estimated, I was pretty happy with that. So I didn't mind go ahead and reducing our funds to fund some vehicles.
What was the ODOT scoping on 238, 72% off of the original? So
yeah.
You can't assign a margin of error at 72% and go into an application process with a straight face and say, you know, we're 75% off of potentially.
I have one more.
Yes.
Thank you.
Sorry, I forgot to include this in the packet, and this is also Public Works design. This, and this is basically what it's a site plan for what it would actually look like. And in case you've never seen a transit hub, there's typically curb cuts.
Yeah.
There you go. Mm-hmm. There's curb cuts and shelters and that kind of thing. So that's what a conceptual drawing would kind of look like. We'll get a better one going once we get closer to the end of the project. So we're pretty happy about that. It's something that's going to fulfill all of our needs now. It'll seat six different vehicles for six different services or routes, so I'm very happy about it. It has a transit kiosk. That's what a customer service booth is going to be, and we would go ahead and house that too because we don't currently have anything. So I'm pretty happy with the project overall. If we do need additional funds, let's say ODOT was correct and it does go over $1 million, I have unused operating funds still sitting there, and I think it probably by the end of this year it'll be at least almost $600,000 we have just sitting there. So if I need to use that, we can.
So when do you think that this will begin?
The funds won't be here till 2019 is when the agreements will be. I would like to be there earlier. I would like to start something earlier. I just don't know if we can at this point. Once the grants get established in terms of our FTA grants, and I'm able to see exactly what they think we have versus what I think we have, I will look into using some of those funds to maybe move forward on it, because we do have to get out of here sooner rather than later, because now that we have the large vehicles, when I walked in here, there was one sitting out there, and I was surprised how much room it actually takes up.
It's amazing. Mm-hmm. They just really
stretch
it out. I think that there's been creative ways with Connect Oregon, the regional solutions one is the recent example of, for the airport, we use Business Oregon as a loan process to where we borrow the funds until the state legislature sells the bonds to pay for the Oregon solutions. And so we have to pay it off, but we can start the engineering for that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't know if Oregon Solutions is the right place to go, but I think what you need to do is find out first is whether or not finding some other method to pay for it in the interim jeopardizes the grant funds. And if not, we'll find a way, some way, to get the funds for you, you know, at least so you can start the engineering and stuff, and maybe the funds come in 19 to build on the day they're, you know, released, as opposed to doing 6 months worth of engineering and survey work, whatever hoops the city's going to make us go through. And, you know, there's a number of things that could take a year that we could fund before you actually even put a shovel in the ground.
That would go against our matching funds, wouldn't it, up to a certain point?
We've met our matching funds by donating the property. I don't want to contribute any more dollars to this. It's just if you can funnel the money and exchange it out later, that would be great.
I think that's a great idea, and I agree with you 100% that there's possibly at least a year's worth of work to get done before, if we could get that done before, then we're ready to go when the funds do get here.
Yeah,
so
that would be really cool.
I think the city would be very cooperative considering that it's caused such an issue out here that they will be very helpful.
Yeah,
yeah, they've been extremely helpful so far.
Yes, I think they will. So this is going to be quite an improvement for the city.
Yes.
You know, as far as appearances.
Yeah.
Instead of having a vacant lot, you know, have actually something there.
Right.
Be good.
And there'll be lighting and security and all those things will be included in the overall cost. So.
No, this will be nice.
Yes. Very, very happy about that. Very happy that it was funded.
So when the drivers have to trade out in a vehicle mid-route, because you don't have any downtime in your motorcycles, so they pull into your transit and change out the feed box, change out the driver. Is that going to happen here, or is that still going to happen out there?
I'll have to look at that because time is money, honestly. Yeah. So even if it takes, and it's funny because if you think for 15 minutes, that's 15 minutes, 242 days a year.
Yeah,
it adds up. So
I don't think it takes them 15 minutes. I'd say it takes them less than five. But if you're already behind in a route. And it's not a stop. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You're not accomplishing two things at the same time. Of a stop where passengers can get on and off, wait a little bit, let the driver come in. You know, then you're
it'll either happen at our office like it currently does, or a driver would come on shift and take a staff car and drive to this location and do it there.
And then the other driver
gets in the staff car and
goes back.
I just want to make sure that we're not adding too much time into the schedule. So I would envision it happening here.
Sure.
Just because it's more convenient that we don't have people in our parking lot moving between a vehicle or something like that.
Yeah.
So
it works okay now, but it might work better to do it there, but I'm sure you thought about that.
We will look into that extensively just to make sure because I don't want to increase our cost, but I think the system needs to work more efficiently, and if that's a way to save time in terms of not having more layover, if we're having a layover here anyway, it makes sense to do it here rather than take the time here and then do it again at our office.
I think that's kind of the way Jackson County does theirs. Their hub, it seems as though those bus drivers have an opportunity to change it out. They have more staff parking.
Yes.
You know, they've got a lot more parking. But so could we. We have all of those parking lots right across the street. There'll be plenty of parking. Mm-hmm. You don't have to use this. I mean, you've got the jury parking contract, I don't think is actually technically been renewed.
It hasn't.
But we've got all of that right there, hundreds of spots.
Yeah, there's a lot of flexibility in this location.
Yeah, really.
To do a lot of different things.
We're pretty blessed that we have those two. And those are designated as public works properties, so there's no need for designation by the property, by the board, to do this. So they're not just general county, they're actual public works. That's something we need to check on, but we've got plenty of time to do that.
Which ones are you talking about, Simon?
The ones between E and D?
I don't think those are public works. I think Phil had them as that back in the day, just so everything routed to us.
Everything was,
yeah.
If it was general government, it was public works, but...
Because I think those weren't those purchased as part of that kind of plan for moving the courthouse or something? They were...
I'm not sure.
Because I know when I was doing some research on them, I think that's what it was, but not sure.
That's Mike to make sure that we've got all that.
Well, some may know, but I'm wondering, too, is it worth looking at using the road and bridge reserve to loan money to get that out moving sooner than later without calling the exchange? I don't want to go without 6% to move our money from one pocket, but if that's feasible, that's another option.
That's a great suggestion. I was not in favor of using property reserve, but roads and bridges in a transit project.
Yeah, that's perfect. Perfect. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that,
it's
too.
It's only making 0.4% on the interest year or something.
Right. Thank you. Just kidding. I'm still limited.
Well, we will move forward on this sooner rather than later.
That's
so that's not a great idea.
I think this is going to be really a great project. I think it's going to be such an improvement, not just to the transit system, but to the vitality of downtown.
I think
it will be
the usability of the people who want to use this.
I agree.
Mm-hmm.
So there's people that call that want to get on the commuter line. They'll drive in Grants Pass all day long. They just don't want to drive in Medford. currently up to this point where we've given some options, but to have a secure option and say, hey, you can park here right in the lot.
Yeah.
It's secure, and then you can just walk to right to jump on the bus, and here's what comes. That would be a great thing to advertise with. So.
This is really nice. Good job.
Thank you. The other thing is we had two projects, or essentially three projects, that were funded through the STFD project as well as the 5339 bus replacement project. The first one is we got $136,000 for real-time vehicle tracking, which will do stop announcements as well as provide information to the public in real time of where our vehicles are at. You can do passenger counts with this kind of software as well. There's all kinds of things that will help us fill out our federal reports and those kind of things. One of the main things is it'll allow our dispatchers to know exactly where our vehicles are at any given time. We have a rule that the bus driver is supposed to call if they get to be like 10 minutes behind, because once they're 10 minutes behind, we actively monitor the system and try to catch them back up. And sometimes the drivers don't do that. So then all of a sudden they call in and they're 15 minutes behind, and then it becomes even more critical. So this will allow our dispatch to know exactly. We'll have a TV on the wall that will display in real time exactly where those vehicles are at. So that'll be a good thing. Like I said, it'll also help us with some of our federal reporting. These grant agreements are on my desk now. They'll come to the board next week. So I'll be talking about it again. So I'm pretty happy about that. There is no match requirement. That's another good thing. And one of the other projects with those STF funds is I asked for matching funds for more vehicles. I asked for three. They funded us for two, which is fine because they also awarded us $260,000 for two more vehicles. And these are going to be smaller vehicles like we currently use. They won't be the large, heavy-duty vehicles. But what this will do is catch us back up and allow us to be on a regular vehicle replacement cycle where we're replacing probably one vehicle a year with a heavy-duty vehicle from here on out until the fleet gets replaced, and we'll be on that schedule again. What happened is we were, with ERA money and other things like that, we replaced 3-4 vehicles at a time.
Right.
So we needed to catch ourselves back up. So we'll take three out of service and then put these two back in. So I'm finally glad that that's being taken care of, and some of our maintenance expense will go down, and some of those other things that we deal with where all of a sudden we have no vehicles won't be an issue anymore. So we got the vehicles, the grants to replace it, as well as the matching funds, so it's going to cost nothing back to the county or the department. And I expect it's going to take about 7 months to get the vehicle tracking software for me to decide what vendor to go with. There's a lot of vendors out there, as you probably know, with any software, they promise the world and then under-deliver. I want to make sure that they can actually deliver on what they're promising before I purchase the product.
Can you talk to IT on those? Do you have to connect?
I will. It won't have to connect into our regular system. It's another software component that's just running.
You'll buy the contract, they'll serve, not IT won't service it.
Maintenance will be part of that, and they typically, and there's different ways they can do it, but I'm looking at them hosting it on their servers, not our stuff.
Right.
And then that way they're responsible for it. Same with our dispatch software, which actually works fairly well, because then if the computer systems go down locally, that system's still up and running. We can log into it and see what's going on. So.
Okay. Good.
So pretty happy about that. Getting back to the ridership, the fiscal year ended in June. So compared to last year, we were down 6.62%. That's about what I expected. There's various reasons for that, and that we've talked about in the past. But the interesting thing is if you look at the year-to-date, which is right below that, which is the calendar year, because I track ridership not only by the fiscal year but the calendar year, because it gives you a different perspective based on time periods when you see fluctuations in ridership. The calendar year, we are actually tied with what we did last year. So whatever was going on in terms of the ridership reduction, it looks like it's been turned around completely. So now it's back on the goal of getting it to grow. And I think with the new buses and some of the other things that we're doing, we're going to see it come back up. Probably we won't be seeing, you know, double-digit growth, but you never know. We're trying some creative things.
You're not advertising at all.
Still not advertising.
I really kind of think that it would be okay to do so.
I had a
just
plan.
Just a little bit to try to start putting it out there. It might even be Facebook is a really good place to start. Low cost or no cost associated with that. And just trying to kind of build awareness slowly. It's almost like a word of mouth. Facebook is all about word of mouth. There are ads, but I don't think we should pay for them. Just be putting a Facebook page and sharing, you know, positive things like the new, that'll get users sharing with other potential users, in my opinion, and I think it'd grow really well that way. But just a thought.
No, I agree 100% because that's essentially how we've grown so far,
right,
was word of mouth. So, you know, to take it to the next level, I definitely agree. I had plans to start an advertising program by now, but the advertiser I was working with, I don't know what happened to her. She was contracted with Fox or something like that, and so I was going to do some television ads. I don't know if she took another job, and I just haven't reached out to connect to see what's going on. What you were talking about with Facebook, I did talk to RVTD, and they recently passed a levy, and they contribute pretty much the success of that levy to their efforts online, their social networking efforts. Their general manager, Julie Brown, offered to have her staff help us with that kind of effort, and they would take it all on for us, specifically for the commuter route. But if we went with the commuter route, we would go ahead and advertise the existing system as well. So,
well, and I think the commuter route is a very good example. I mean, it's a very good opportunity. Well, you're not going to be at capacity there for a long time.
Right.
Those buses are huge, but they were free. That's why we're using them, basically. And so, you know, you're not going to. Your fear of, oh my gosh, what if we're overwhelmed and we don't have the capacity within our
system? Don't worry about it anymore.
Not with that one. And if you do have that problem, you know, all those buses are designed so people can stand if they have to.
Right.
And none of your routes, other than going from Cave Junction to Medford, which uses the large buses, are so far other than Wolf Creek. But I don't think that's going to have a problem. You know, in town, they're short enough to where most people
can stand. Yes.
They have to.
So I was pretty happy with that offer. It bodes well because they're going to set up a route that goes between South Medford High School, their transfer station, and the Table Rock RCC campus.
Wow, good deal.
So we've been working on to make sure that we connect correctly in this time correctly, and so that offer was made, and I think that we'll probably see us making a push at least with that before September.
Yeah.
So time is
critical.
And it's quickly running away from me here. So.
But at least you've got a partner who's done it. They know what they're doing.
Yes, and so they have staff that's been dedicated to do this, so I'm pretty happy about that.
Excellent.
And the ridership for the commuter line is still growing. We're at about 60 average daily boardings, like I talked about before. That fluctuates greatly day to day. I did talk to the staff of the Middle Road MPO, which is the COG, and they are going through the last passenger survey and analyzing it specifically for the commuter line. Which I'm pretty happy about. That is another thing that I don't have to do, and that's not costing us anything. It's money that's coming out of the MPO that was set aside for planning, so we're pretty good to go.
Great.
Vehicle purchases. We got all of our vehicles that we've ordered, so we've gotten two smaller ones, two large ones. We're still working the kinks out of the large ones. I'm very happy with them so far. They are meeting my expectations exactly what I wanted to see. The passengers are very happy about it. The drivers are very happy about it.
They're nice buses.
They are very nice buses. I was very impressed when they got here. Something to really be proud of. The interesting thing is now that we're using these large buses, our drivers previously were having a hard time. If they got pinned down against the curb, the traffic wouldn't let them back in, even though they used the yield signs, even though there's a law against it. With the large buses, we don't seem to have that problem. And I don't know why, if it's just it's a larger presence or what's going on, that people are letting them back out into traffic. And I think maybe it's just the fact that it's this large transit bus. Other motorists see it as what it is. It's a transit vehicle carrying a lot of people.
Once they get trained, you know,
let them back
new to Grants Pass, still relatively, it takes a while, and now they're just understanding that this is what's going on.
Yeah. So the other exciting is, well, I don't know if it's exciting. The other thing I've been looking at, we've talked about alternative fuel vehicles. I have been looking at electric vehicles. This is all preliminary because it's a big step. I think electric might be the way to go versus compressed natural gas. Compressed natural gas, you're looking at probably a $2 million investment. in the fueling facility itself. 10 years.
Let that be a consideration, because I think that Avista actually paid for most of the one that just was built in Central Point. So when you're factoring that in, it really, for me, I think cumulatively for one facility in Grants Pass somewhere, either with Public Works, City or County, or even ODOT or somebody like that, that's going to be appreciated over a lot of different users if when it's built, because I think it's when. So don't have that be the, oh my gosh, it's a $2 million build, we can't do that.
Right.
Look at the long term, and that, maybe electric is the best way to go long term.
Well, Avista, I think, would be very amenable to working on something like that because of the supply, projected supply of natural gas over the next 20 years.
Yeah,
projections I've seen. They may be very amenable to that.
So
I've been, like I said, I've been looking into the electric vehicles. They are very expensive. Mm-hmm. They are roughly double what we're spending now for the large heavy-duty vehicle. So that's something that you have to consider. They're saying that you will save, we will save $40,000 or $400,000 over the life of the vehicle. So now that starts to put it in par with the vehicle that we cost right there, that it would cost right now.
Right.
And then there is some flexibility, but it's just, it's something I've been considering. There's been a few members of the public that have been adamant in terms of us buying electric vehicles, and I just am like, no, it's not the time. We need to look into this, but I just want to let the board know I am looking into it.
I mean, we don't have the margin of error that some of these larger municipalities have.
No.
That's saying they're going to be a first mover, whether it costs X or Y. They don't really care. We're just going to electric.
Right.
What are you substituting? I mean, if you're talking about the environment, and one of those passionate people I'm sure came in and spoke to me, the same person, they said, you know, I worked in the energy sector in D.C. for 6 years, and you have to look at the whole formula of how that electricity is produced. And luckily, in the Northwest, most of it's hydro. The other half is coal. So you think you're doing something well. Natural gas, you know. So
right. So we're exploring it.
Fiscally responsible is
that's the key. You're exactly right.
To look at.
Especially when you're talking about this kind of cost up front, maybe some unknown technologies.
Disposal fee of the battery
right.
at the end of the life of that vehicle. Who's recycling those? What are people doing with them?
Yeah, the mileage that you get, can we run it all day?
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
Right.
So there's a lot of things to be looked at, but it is something that I am exploring.
Great.
I do not want to be the first one on the block to say we're doing it just to do it. I've seen agencies do that, and it never works out well. I'll go ahead and defer to TriMet or Eugene or even Seattle, King County Metro, to make these decisions,
sure.
and then we'll look at it. So, the other thing, I just put out the RFP for our Transit Master Plan, so it'll open, it's already open, it'll open Friday.
Is that in conjunction with Public Works? Master, we're doing our thing.
Yeah, well, it's not in. It runs concurrently.
Okay.
Favorite that way.
You referenced an RTSP.
That's okay. Exactly right. Ours will be done before theirs, but this will be specifically for transit, and it'll set the tone of kind of where we're going to be at in the next.
How long is that? 20 years.
I can't give a straight answer, but it's supposed to concur with the regional transportation plan, which means 34 years. That's what ODOT's telling you. Right. Normally, a transit plan would run 20 years.
That's odd.
So, I don't know. Whatever they end up saying it needs to be is what it'll need to be. Because
it'll have to go out longer than a UGB. We have an urban reserve for 10 after the 20-year UGB. Why would you,
It's a new rule that just popped up and had something to do with it. It's probably something unrelated, but I hope to start it in 2 months and have it finished in
8 or 4 years. That's weird. Anyway.
So the finished plan will come back to the board for final adoption probably in about 8-9 months. If I have to get an extension on the grant, I will, because I'd rather have a good product rather than just chase a deadline. So you'll be involved in that as well. There'll probably be aspects of that plan I will bring forward for approval. I hope to, when it's all done, then finally we have a guidebook for what transit should be, so it's not just me saying this is the next step or this is where we're going next.
Well, they did the first reading last night of the Urban Area Infrastructure Finance Act. Incremental finance thing. And I think those projects, the only one I can think of is maybe some economic development that's happening in the Spalding, so you're going to have employees that are down there that you don't have a stop really that facilitates it now. Stuff like that that we could probably garner if those plans, you know, plans are plans, who knows what's going to happen. The other thing is the convention center someplace that, you know, that you're routing stuff from hotels to convention center. Those are the thoughts that I have of trying to work on where's the UGB going, where's this urban area thing, all that stuff.
That's exactly right. We're going to try to plan that for the future. Currently, we actually do have a stop over by the Spalding.
Yeah.
And, but it's not the greatest.
Rogue Valley Fashion Store place.
I thought the Spalding was over off of Agnes.
It is. And, oh, you're right.
Yeah, but there's one off of... It's on Agnes. There. As soon as you cross the railroad tracks and go around the corner, we do have a stop right there, so people can walk, but it's we're servicing that, the Gladiola School, and at the same time, I am keeping abreast of it, but you're exactly right, knowing where those things are, being able to set that down on a plan and say, this is what we're doing, this needs to happen, so that's coming up. The training review, we've been responding, haven't heard anything negative back from either the FTA or the consultant, so
great.
We have done all those issues. The deadlines come up every month, so that's when I start to submit documents. So far, everything that we've submitted, they've approved.
Wow, great.
Pretty happy about that. I expect to have all the remaining six issues by the end of September. So I might have to take an extension on our DBE plan, Disadvantaged Business Enterprise Plan, but I don't know yet because I haven't started on it. But that's the one that kind of scares me the most. So that's it with the triennial review, and then we do have some route changes that we will be incorporating probably in the next 2 to 3 months. There's a public review process that has to happen by law, and we've also, the county's adopted, you know, what the process is for any route changes. So these are improvements to the service, but even so, they're going to have to happen. And we will be placing a new stop on Hawthorne for the new senior disabilities offices that just got built. I'll probably have that done in the next couple months so we're aware of what's going on. I wasn't aware that that facility was going in until they called me and wanted to stop, so which is the backwards way to go. Normally you ask me, hey, we're going to put it here, what do you think? Not all agencies are on board and doing that yet, which is hopefully what the Transit Master Plan will also help to facilitate. So that's pretty much it for my quarter report. We're heading into the summer months here, so it's pretty calm. The only other things I would like to probably start some sort of agreement with Rogue Community College, separate from the agreement that we currently have to allow people to use the commuter line, especially now that we'll connect and they can get to the Table Rock campus, and they have some large plan improvements for that campus. So I would like to be able to do that, and that would basically be the same thing that we do now where they have a sticker that they put on their ID and show it to the driver and allows them to use that route. So that's about the only other thing on my plate. So
okay.
There's no questions, that's it, and I will see you next week.
Okay.
Thank you.
Good report. Thank you, Scott. Public Works, Mr. Brandis.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I like what you've done with the place. I think there's more room in here. Less furniture.
Yeah.
No, it's a little brighter. So we'll start with the difficult / stinky ones and work our way to these things. Just a quick one. North Applegate, it's a ditch company out there. If you remember, we had a blowout there in the winter. The big rains in January went across the road at Noble Dairy and all. There's now another section that has started sloughing quite a bit. A resident hot rodded in a couple of plateaus, if you will, and so now the canal has lost some of its lateral stability, so it is inching down towards the road. We've cleaned it up twice recently, $2,000 or $3,000 each. We don't think it's going to make it through the summer. If it blows, it's going to be big and nasty. So we had a meeting with North Apple, the ditch company, before the irrigation season started, more to talk about that one back in January. Met with them Monday, Dave Rubrek and I and Wally, to talk about this other issue now. And effectively telling them that we will have to start building for cleanup because their canal is compromising the road and they need to deal with their infrastructure. The hard part is their annual budget, I think, is on the tune of like $6,000 or $7,000, and so one blowout like that's going to be 10 years of revenue. So kind of twofold, hopefully spurring into a little more aggressive action repairing and maybe to also backstop them to look at their rates. As I understand, it's, well, $6,000 for that many acres that are getting watered. I think it's like $30 an acre a year or something comically low. So the rest of the road system and the county residents paying gas tax shouldn't be subsidizing that, so hopefully starting to put that discussion further that way.
Is the solution piping it?
It could be. The difficulty being, yeah, we can't do it mid-season easily. So we're actually talking with them. Is there even a way to get some VisClean down just to get it past that section? It could be tough, but I think if you got VisClean down and sandbagged it, it might be enough to hold it off. But it's squishy enough that, yeah, I mean, Dave's thinking it's not going to make it till the end of August, let alone mid-September when the thing probably shuts. So fingers crossed for now.
I think it shouldn't be terribly expensive. I mean,
it's, it's probably a 60-foot rift to do it right there, probably a 48-incher, the tough part. Then again, those bracing and everything else, because you've now lost that lateral stability. So that first one from back in January that they have bridged with a culvert is probably only supported for 60% of the way. You've kind of got the uphill slope is supported underneath the tube, halfway or more. But then this edge is really just the force of the two ends. It's not optimal. I mean, it needs to be armored from the road going back up, but, you know, I'm not in a position to say, yeah, the county will pay for, you know, $5,000 of armoring work, so they're going to have to take a lot more ownership. So drafting a letter, I'm going to run it by Wally, but just kind of a table move.
When you met with them, I'm just going to throw this as an option.
Mm-hmm.
If the North Applegate Irrigation... Is it a district?
Northside Ditch Company, they call them.
Ditch Company.
District, though, yes.
Are they a legal entity, or is it just, they just call it that?
They are a legal entity recognized by the Secretary of State. As legal looked at it, though, they are lax in their reporting, I will say. I think you have to report every year, and they're pushing that third year, so it's...
Okay.
Inadequate.
Because what I was wondering is if you met with them and said, okay, if the people, the members on this ditch, would agree to assess themselves to pay it back, we'll go ahead and get it in before the season.
Right. And the hard part, yeah. And then they want to do everything themselves. That's frequently what happens. And the big slide in January, you know, Jerry Noble brings his equipment out and did a lot of the work too. But it's like, nope, we cannot.
That's what I'm saying. If you want to get it done and get it done right so it doesn't blow out next year.
Right.
We can do it, and we can do it for this, but you have to agree, and then it becomes a lien on their property because it's their ditch company.
I don't want it.
No.
We don't want to lien it, though, because we might.
Well, the thing is that if they agree to pay it and then they don't pay it, that's why I was asking if they're an entity, then you could. You know, if they don't pay it, you could.
Right.
And I don't want to either, but I'm just saying that if you're willing to...
And I don't know where
they're to do it, so it's not caving in next month.
Right.
And then, they're going to be liable for the road.
Right. But I don't know that we have a legal ability outside the right-of-way to preemptively do work.
Yeah.
So that's what it was.
So
that's the worst one, right?
These people want this road maintained, too, because they use it every day
more
than anybody else.
Sure.
You know, you're getting your stuff, and you can't get it. You know, milk doesn't just sit around. You can't get access to that road. So I'm sure, you know, you would think that they would want that done.
And they wanted everything in-house to keep the cost down, which I get, but, you know, yeah, I mean, you could shut the water off and get it replaced in 2 days, but not if it's Joe out there on his tractor putting along. It's going to have to get hammered by people with big equipment doing a quick get.
Yeah, but you can do it in an excavator in a day.
I don't know if we can get to this one. It may take a Robco or Copeland that's got some of the really long throw. It's up the hill a ways, and it's soupy. I mean, I think you could put a Volkswagen-sized rock in that bottom, and it would sink halfway. It is a mess right now, and it's clay, so it's just like scooping up butter. Yep.
That's the tough stuff that doesn't come out of your bucket.
No, exactly. That takes half of the instigation of banging on the side of the truck to get, because otherwise, yeah, nothing comes out of the bucket.
It's crazy.
Yep. Same vein as Scott, we are gearing up to start our TSP transportation system plan. We applied for a TGM grant about 3 weeks ago. It's a transportation
growth management.
They would pay for about half of the report, and the feeling is it's not as good of an odds of getting that one because that money is actually somewhat portable, and the state likes the exciting Yahoo projects, not boring stuff like updating a TSP.
We got one for the Dimmick campus redevelopment.
Right.
That was exciting.
Yeah, I don't think TSP will get that level, but it's like, you know, we have to at least let's do it and show interest.
Sure.
But there is another grant process for TSP specific that's starting now, so we'll be discussing with ODOT throughout August. They do a lot of the actual work themselves in-house, so I think that's a much better source of funds, but we have both those irons in the fire. Our TSP will probably be on the order of 200 minimum. I'm guessing could even be 250. It's a pretty big undertaking, but the ODOT grant would cover all but 10.27% of it, and so we'll know more on those two as we move along. We just finished up with
TSP is supposed to be done.
They say about every 10 years, and we're June of 03, so we're 13. It's ODOT kind of steers them as they want to. Jackson County is doing theirs, the city's doing theirs, and I think they kind of look at the area and say, yep, this person's about next, this entity's about next. They're kind of the furthest behind. So
well, it makes sense to me to kind of have the list of projects that we've been working on for the last five to 10 years kind of coming to, you know, the end. We need to get what's the vision for the next stuff.
Right.
And you really need to have that codified system-wide. The South Y, you know,
right.
The obvious Canary and the big one.
Right.
And we need to get it, you know, regroup, get our head around it, get everybody together,
yeah.
And figure out how we're going to try to address it.
Right. And so if you look at like the 03 one, yeah, you see 60% of the minor, 80% of the minor betterment projects are all knocked out.
Right.
But yeah, now like a lot of the assumptions about what's our gas tax revenue going to be, what's the ONC going to be, have completely changed. So, and then besides that, then you have citizen advisory groups. Starting all the way from, hey, put your 10 most important projects, everybody go put a button on the wall kind of a thing. It's that whole process of tiering all those projects and winning all those projects. ODOT weighs in, Larry Graves weighs in, the city weighs in. So, yeah, you end up with a pretty deep, broad range of projects. In a similar vein, we just got done working with OBEC to develop a bridge and culvert strategic plan, effectively, in terms of what our current needs are, what our going forward needs are, what our annual maintenance needs are. The big takeaway is we've got a backlog of maintenance, as you would expect, and our bridges skew old, but our graph looks pretty similar to Douglas and Lincoln County. So we're not alone at all. They have their guesstimates in terms of when county bridges are going to come up for funding. That's once you get below that sufficiency rating, you can apply for the funding, and their recommendation was to continue as we were. As soon as something hits that point, apply as quick as you can so you don't end up with a bigger backlog. And so they've got 12 bridges they think will hit that list in the next decade or so, and our match on those would be about $2.8 million. And then on top of that, they're talking about an annual other maintenance, routine maintenance for culverts and smaller structures of, you know, probably $500,000 to $750,000. So about where we thought we would be, but this further codifies, you know, here's the likely 5 and 10 year outlays for when those bigger HVP ones are going to come around. So that'll be another component of the TSP. The other nice thing was, especially with the culverts, just because there are so stinking many culverts, we get the big ones that erupt and we see it because it's $50,000 or $100,000. But this got down to the level of here's the $5,000 fixes here and there as well. So we can start trying to stagger that and not fix 100 culverts a year, but maybe fix 10 culverts a year for the next 10 years.
Well, the thing about culverts and bridges in general, I mean, water passage, it doesn't matter whether or not it's 48-inch, 2 feet down, or a 10-inch, 2 feet down. You still have to cut the road up.
Yep, stop
the
traffic.
All that stuff, regardless of what size it is. I mean, it does take longer to replace a 48-inch
right.
as opposed to a 10-inch, but the impact of the road being washed out is probably not that much different during the flood
right.
season. So.
And it sounds harsh, but the reality is we can preemptively replace a culvert on Upriver Road. I'm not going to preemptively replace a culvert that serves 4 houses. You know, if it's a fire emergency, we'll figure out a way to get folks in and out. But, yeah, we're just not in a position to preemptively replace low-volume road.
Mm-hmm. Well, that assessment, I think, is really key. So, you know, the general feeling that I've had about bridges and the culverts is that we've been pretty good about keeping up, but you don't know what the life expectancy curve is of the infrastructure,
mm-hmm.
and it's probably, what if it's 50 years for culverts and 100 years for bridges, and there's this balloon that is moving through time,
mm-hmm.
that's, you know, so we've been fine because we've been dealing on this side of the bell curve, but the thing that's coming
right.
you know, could be, you're going to have, because you were replacing 3 last year, you're going to have to replace 30 next year because they all are kind of
mm-hmm.
coming in. They were all put in 50 years ago. And that stuff kind of happens, and it feels as though there was probably a lot of replacements in this 60s and 70s that are going to start coming up.
I suspect the 64 flood probably triggered a lot of stuff. A lot of culverts put in 65.
That's the kicker. That's the time frame that's going to be coming to fruition mm-hmm. here. And people don't think about that. It's not a static line.
No. Perfect world it was. All the graphs, they kind of say optimal.
Right.
Yeah, you're below it, then you get 50 years more, and it spikes way above it. So,
right.
Yeah, so it starts flattening out.
So that people are saying, you know, mm-hmm. we're aware. Mm-hmm. We were planning for this. We know the age of our infrastructure. We know when it's coming to fruition.
Hence the reserve, because, yeah, we could have $600,000 culverts pop up next year. Yeah. Big
it's not about what's happened in the last 10 years. Mm-hmm.
Similar vein, we are working up a seismic bridge study we are interested in doing. I talked about this with the budget briefly. So at this point, we would be looking at effectively just the stuff near the urbanizing area, county bridges like in District 3. This is more in-depth than an overarching county one. This would be probably $4,000 to $5,000 per bridge, where there's actually going to be structural engineers that come out and look and say, is this thing seismically vulnerable? What can we do to harden it off now? Because a lot of these bridges may have been built in, say, 1985, pre-seismic standards, but they've got a lot of usable life left. So is it a matter of, hey, can we put $50,000 into this upgrade to keep this thing standing in the event of an earthquake? So giving extra weight to things near the hospitals, the schools, bigger gathering points to at least keep that central hub stronger. The other thought being, we keep hearing rumblings, and you may have heard more than I, that there's a good possibility in the next transportation plan from the state that there is money specifically out there for seismic. So if we're out in front of this thing and can quickly say, hey, here's a list we've got that are ready for this type of money.
Mm-hmm. That's the top five priority.
We're in front, hopefully not on a curve like that.
I think we'll learn more about the next legislative cycle at the Oregon Coastal Caucus. They really, the last time I was there, they really were discussing, you know, what is that legislative agenda coming up in February? Mm-hmm. And we need to know.
What is the date of that?
It's August sometimes. We need to do that assessment so that people who are doing those assessments, when the grant funds are available, they're not going to get them. But those who have done it
right.
preemptively, and your prioritization about getting the most amount of people to those vital public services or getting out of areas that are being really bad.
We can't fix them all,
but we can save as many as we can.
Right. Study heavy today. The North Valley engineering report, I would say, is at about 85% review. If either of you really want the non-medical alternative to Somanex, I'd be happy to leave a copy with you here. It's going well. I've given two sets of revisions back to Civil West. I'm going to get a copy to Mike Bolweg today. He's the contractor for the school district side for helping maintain theirs, to get his input. Once it's fairly close, it would then go to DEQ for what sounds like a 3 or 4 week review. But as we suspected, it's looking like the Orenco style system would be the way to go. And potential properties we look at first tier would be the county owned properties at the south end of the airport. Can't put anything on them anyway. Good spot to do some.
Are they totally encumbered by development?
I don't know about totally, but there's a lot of height restrictions, as my sense, and talking to Larry. So.
If you're in the path, there are the restrictions, but those lots, you're talking about the lots that are across the road?
Kind of southeast across the mm-hmm. side. From
mm-hmm. That'd be a good spot for them, right. actually.
Well, I want to know exactly what the restrictions are
right.
before we make that
right.
determination.
Wouldn't want
we,
to say,
we say
viable
you
commercial
can't put anything over 5 feet. Well, that's not going to work for any building.
No, it's like 100.
I don't want to hit the Leica. I want to exactly yeah. what it is.
I think it's 100.
I think they're pretty heavily restricted.
Yeah.
But if it's 100 feet, there isn't an industrial building within the industrial park that's over 100 feet.
Mm-hmm.
So yep. most users that are using right now could use it, and maybe that's you have. I want to know
mm-hmm.
what
mm-hmm.
all those things are. So I wouldn't mind taking a look.
Sure, give that one.
Great progress.
Got some,
take that one.
I think you've
got some doodles on it.
And
so this is not my edits that are shown here have already been made.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, you see some red lines
coming right along.
We're close. We're probably a month late, and then we just got busy, and we actually had some stuff at the park.
Summer of 16 for DEQ review.
Yeah, I think we're close.
Or midsummer, you're
yeah.
fine.
Yeah. And then the one-stop, once this is in the can, then the one-stop meeting is next, and it sounds like those you can just kind of schedule whenever. They'll probably get a month of lead time, but it's not like we have to wait.
Yeah, they seem to be just like waiting until we're ready to do it.
Yeah. And Mike Boyd has done a bunch of those, it sounds like, too, so it'd be good to keep him close at hand and attend with us. Yeah. Our guys and mechanics got up and took a look at the line striper we've got budgeted a couple, 3 weeks ago. Looks like it's going to fit our needs. It's going to be right around what we budgeted, $4.25, $4.50, depending on, actually depends on the socket we put in the thing for tracking that. So that'll be, I'll be coming to you with a PO for that in the next few weeks. It's probably a 4 month build, so we'll want to get it sooner than later to get ready for season. Redwood Avenue, Allen Creek, that project has started. If you haven't been out there, they've already got some curb in on Allen Creek.
Yes.
Had the full-blown pre-con late last week with Copeland and the city and everybody else. Should be humping right along. I think it'll be a great project. Just trying to now figure out timing for the BMX, the other big one, just to disrupt them as little as possible so they know when stuff is moving. Small Creek Bridge on West Side. You remember you signed a road closure for that a couple weeks ago. That is effectively done. The road is not technically open, but folks are using it as gravel surface. It'll be open Friday officially. Last paving overlay will be the 25th. Is that Monday? Yeah, Monday the 25th. So went pretty good. Started off a little slow, but they caught us and got back on schedule. So the next week's road closure was good.
And about Slate Creek. Was there something about Slate Creek yesterday?
Not that I heard.
No.
Hope not. That's a new one.
Yeah.
And then the last one, this one's just the South Middle School. I'm going to bring a pretty good issue.
It has to do with the water. Just real quick, I just remembered how Slate Creek came in. We had a report from the Soil and Water Conservation Districts. It was the Water Councils. For Josephine County.
And Watershed Councils.
Watershed Councils. We had just a conversation about, so as we're doing the culvert and even maybe seismic, the element of fish passage, ingress and egress, that needs to be another consideration to all of these, if we're making sure that there's doing whatever we can to provide that. They've got, you know.
Oh, we don't have a choice.
Right? So yeah. I think, you know, from my standpoint, yeah, we go ahead and we do it, maybe because we're required to. But it's not a bad story to tell, even if, you know, we're making these improvements from these culverts that were installed 50 years ago that didn't have that requirement, and now we're making that progress. And I think the watershed councils, they seem like they want to know, you know, when we're doing those things, so they can, you know, check it off their list, too, as like an improvement.
We've had two larger ones in the last 6 or 8 years where we've had to do some additional fist passes. One of them involved getting a holding pond down below because it gets into how far of a jump they have to get into there. And another one that was a huge culvert up on, I think it was Bloom, where we actually had to go in with a bobcat and put rock and whatnot in the middle of the culvert to whatever it does, create holding areas for the fish. So. Yeah, we don't. There's no getting away from it, but we've looked for some opportunities to partner with the fish folks and actually donated some rock here and there for some of the projects, like when they took out the dam.
That would be good for us to know.
It's good
for
you, yeah.
That's what I'm talking about, that we're making sure we're checking that box. So, yeah, we do all these things that nobody knows. I don't even know about.
Yeah,
you know?
The hardest wrinkle is couching it under road fund, so oftentimes you have to call it, like, towards TMDL, improving habitat that way.
Yep.
Yeah, it can happen. South Middle School, this is the last one I can hit. This one is underway. It's the partnership with the school district. James Lowe and his crew have already been out there moving some dirt, utilizing our equipment. It's going to start in earnest the next couple weeks, the goal being to have it done and booked up before the teachers go back the week before everyone else. So I think that's like August 29th, something like that, the week before Labor Day. But it's going to be great. You can see the new design. So it's, besides wrapping the sidewalk all around, it's going to have a full-blown curb out here for the buses to kind of enter to have further shielding off that turn. So almost like an airport drop-off style thing. The mechanics of the school district were a little upset because they want the ability to, if a bus dies, to get in there and out. They wanted mountable curbs, but we're not going to do that. It's just not terribly safe. You still have after-hours functions and folks that pull a lot of crazy stunts. And if you've been out on Harbeck Road at 8:30 at night, this curve is, you can take it at 50. I've seen it happen a lot of times. Mm-hmm. So That's the reasoning for the full-blown curb there, but it's just going to give their buses a lot better access.
What would they do with a mountable curb? Well, I don't want
they can take over the bus. It's about 25 inches high. It's almost like a glorified speed bump. So
yeah, we wouldn't want buses up on sidewalks.
No, we wouldn't. That's what they want. If one, so say this first bus dies dropping off kids, now to get a wrecker in, you'd have to potentially back out all these other buses or try to get them over that. So a mountable curb, you could theoretically have them rot out of there to get out of the way. But
no.
Failing that, it's just, yeah, it didn't. The trade-off didn't make sense to us either.
No. Curbs and sidewalks are designed to
right.
take.
That's true, yeah.
And instead of replacing it in 15 years, we do it in 2.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've seen a bus over a 6-inch curb anyway.
Oh, sure. Too,
so.
Yeah.
But this, as it is now, this pathway gets the snot used out of it. Once this sidewalk connection is made, it's going to be even
yeah.
busier yet. So that's a good project.
Well, and doesn't that move the buses out from the parking lot, which adds
yes.
There's so much congestion.
This
is parents picking
this
up
is a cluster on
and
top
buses
of things.
Coming and going and kids mm-hmm. everywhere. It's really not safe the way it's designed and used right now. This is going to make it really. I think they'll be great.
They've got the same problem in North and South. I think South is like 100 students over capacity, and North's like 150. North, they actually drop them off up on Morgan now because there's just no room for the buses.
Right.
So it's, they've got to do something.
Cool.
So that's the end of the big stuff, I think.
Little stuff, there's a sinkhole on Fruitvale.
Yeah!
How's that going to, that's not going to turn into a Curry County. I'm just kidding.
Luckily, that is
but
still.
There probably was some little indicator,
That was that was storm drain work
right.
last December,
no
so
right
it's some, actually.
I think some storms in August, and
yeah, it was bigger than it looked. Probably
yeah.
3 yards of material, and then of course it failed on a Friday at about noon. So it's like, oh, crap, hurry out there and get it.
I went over it on Friday morning, and I was like, well, that's a water, thing.
Yep.
It was just about
oh,
that size.
Yeah.
I was like, that's a water main that wasn't there before, and
yeah, there was a cavity. Under this table, a little bigger than that. Yeah. Oh, yeah. You drove that, you wouldn't get out. So, that was the storm drain work. We're working with the city. The contractor's going to be on the hook for that one. It's still within the whatever their maintenance period was. So, it's going to be their nickel to fix.
Thank goodness.
Yeah, right? The traveling. It's not
a good place.
Look at that and say, man, I'm glad the asphalt was strong.
The most highly congested intersection in Fruitvale,
mm-hmm.
other than the one at 238, but right there.
And you got big trucks dropping off to Grover and all that stuff. Oh, yeah, I'm surprised they didn't punch through it, frankly.
Wow.
Yep.
Crazy.
Better now than
that. Thank you, Rob.
Man, that's all I got. That's great.
All right.
That's good.
You know where I am?
Okay.
Very good.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
Thank you. Finance report. We have Mr. Arthur.
So, just the main issue is not much change from last week, but the main issue is on the travel policy. Made a few minor revisions to what I submitted last week. No substantive feedback from any of the departments that I sent it out to and said, please give me a response.
Some feedback, and I wouldn't want. No, I'm just kidding. Thanks a lot, blah blah. Whoever submitted, not wasn't substantive. I'm just kidding.
Yes.
That's great.
So at this point, I believe the next step would be simply to put it on the admin calendar for approval. The only possible catches that I'm scheduled to be out on vacation next week, so I would not be available for Wednesday admin, to speak to the policy. The changes are pretty,
and they're not substantial. They don't
exactly
affect the public.
Right.
It's just staff, and they've had their opportunity to comment.
Correct.
Correct.
It's not a public thing, and it's
okay.
Really the focus was to narrow. The focus was to make sure that we put in place for the per diem process. The process would be the same, so we wouldn't have that either or approach to travel reimbursements. We're going to focus in on the federal per diem rate, and that's the rate we're going to use for any and all travel.
Most defensible, easy for everybody to add.
Correct. Correct. So the actuals, we're getting rid of the actuals. The idea was, saving money if somebody didn't actually spend, but the point was you spent more money tracking receipts and reconciling back to the original expenses. So
we're
also just
spending a tremendous amount of time trying to track that, and that was not, you know, penny wise and a pound foolish.
Right, right. So the only thing, though, is you look at the travel, is I still have to leave some provision for actual expense. A perfect example would be if somebody flew in to wherever they were going, they had a cab. They had to take a cab from the airport to the hotel or where the conference is. So, I mean, some of those costs you cannot predict. You can't say this is exactly what we're going to. So I did leave some language in there that allowed that provision for actual costs after the fact, but basically said, you know, meals and mileage per diem, and that's what you're going to get. So,
Ted, can I, when do you leave?
Monday.
If I can look at it before then, that'd be, and we can work out any more questions and stuff. Because there were a couple of other things Commissioner Walker and I were talking about. We go on more trips, I think, than the Commissioner Hecken, but this isn't necessarily for this board, it's for all future boards, but I don't feel, you know, for a two-night stay for a conference that, you know, starts at 8 and, you know, ends at a particular time where you're going to have to stay two nights. That's not, I don't need the board to ask for my permission to do that. You know, it's well within the cap.
Just get the trip approved.
Well, I don't need to do that. With a cap is the budget for travel. I don't care if you go on one trip, you spend 5 days, and that's your budget for the year, you're done. You know, you're going to have to come back to the board to ask for more travel funds, and then they're going to say, well, why did you travel? You know, that for me is the checkpoint that's necessary. I'm going to the Oregon Coastal Caucus thing. Mm-hmm. That's a two-day conference. I'm staying for two nights. Under this current policy that I was not aware of, we have never operated under, two-night stay requires the approval of the board, in-state or out-of-state.
Right.
Out-of-state for sure, and I'm totally in favor
of that. And that's what the distinction between in-state and out-of-state are two different. So the policy as I have it here, and you can review it and take a look at it, the out-of-state requires the board approval before any commissioner can travel out-of-state. The in-state is just the standard in-state policy.
Great.
That would apply to all departments and all employees. So it didn't have anything unique for the commissioners. It's just the standard policy for all in-state travel.
I do think it's important, and I don't know if it's in it, I can't remember, but all managers and all electeds should check in, I think, when doing an overnight conference day. They all do with their liaison commissioner. I think that's appropriate so that we know, you know, where they're going and what they're doing. Because they're all of that travel is on behalf of the county, the board, and furthering the policies and direction that we have. And I don't see any problem with just letting that liaison know. At least there's somebody on the board that says...
We already have a policy that they have to let their liaison know about their travel. Is it in there? Mine do.
They are not required.
What I put in the policy is that travel reimbursement requests for department heads must be signed by board liaison or designee.
The reimbursement does, but that doesn't mean that they have to notify you before they go. I would like to be in a
pre-approval.
They do, but if they're not telling you, well, of course they're getting the reimbursement. So if you say, well, I didn't know you were going to, then you do know.
Well, I suppose if they travel for free, is that what we're saying? You know,
well,
if they're not going to cost the county.
Because lots of times for some of these things, like with the emergency management and some of the health, and those are free trainings, or they do have arrangements for free lodging or whatever, but they still tell me they're going.
Yeah.
So.
It's not in the policy.
But it's not in there.
Tell you. And I wouldn't mind it, and that it's a travel policy, just to be notified.
Yeah, I don't know if for reimbursements it requires the approval.
and maybe you just put in prior notification.
Employee, so in-state travel, employee, department head, or finance director must approve all in-state travel by employees conducting county business for any reason. So I think the question comes in is, you know, when you have elected officials and liaisons. So that's just communication.
When you say approve the travel,
that sounds like it's...
They're supposed to, and mine do. Mine tell me when they're going to go somewhere, so...
Okay, good. I think that'll be...
If they expect to get reimbursement, they need to tell us they're going.
Yeah. So in-state approval is in there, and out-of-state it's the same thing, where it says must be reviewed in advance for necessity and appropriateness.
Great.
Before travel is approved in writing. So...
Good.
But you want to paper copy?
So what meeting do you want to get that on to?
Just next Wednesday is fine with me.
You want to move it to Wednesday?
July, but right. This is, you know, we're still in July. It's fine.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, okay.
Is the expectation that this will be instituted?
That soon as approved. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll. This Wednesday.
Can you get the order?
Does it require an order?
An order? No, it's just an internal policy. I don't think any other policy has orders associated with it.
Why?
Very few. I don't know.
This is part of the personnel policy manual.
Okay.
It's not the admin policy manual. It's the personnel policy manual. So it's just a section within the personnel policy manual.
It's just an update.
Right.
Okay. So does it go on admin?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Admin, and Commissioner Hare will address it. He's going to meet with Arthur to make sure he has...
Yeah, all these policies used to be part of the admin policy manual, which had a separate order for each policy, but we moved quite a few of them into the personnel policy manual and took them out of the admin policy. So.
Okay,
great.
Well, anything else?
That's what I wanted to bring forward.
Okay. Very good.
Any questions?
While you're here, I met with, who was it, Allied? Republic.
Republic.
Yeah, thanks. After their meeting with us about extending recycling services to the north part of it, had a really good meeting with them about trying to kind of codify our recycle program right now in the county. We don't really have, it's somewhat ad hoc. It's not really refined. Not necessarily endorsed by the board. We spend roughly, I think the mine was telling me, our total trash bill for the county is somewhere around $50,000 to $70,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
We'd like to make some progress on trying to reduce that, because if you think about it, most of the trash that we dispose of is really paper-focused. That's probably significantly, and I wouldn't even want to speculate to 50% of it. But if you think about it, we don't live here. We're coming in for lunches or something like that, and it's bathroom type of new, you know, papers, but everything else should be fairly recyclable, and our fees should be lower than our expenses should be lower. Not that recycling is free anyway, but it is a lower cost. And so they've got a new system that they're developing, and they rolled it out to Ryan and I. We are the first municipality that would entertain this as a thing, and they suggested we roll it out very slowly with departments that have buy-in. Yes, we want this, and it'll be reducing their costs overall to Ryan's budget. It's not as though it's assigned to each specific department.
Right.
Just captured in that 63 cents per square foot. But I think we could make good progress there. Mm-hmm. The challenge for Ryan is he's having, there's fewer and fewer low-hanging fruit for us to reduce the cost of providing the space, because we've done so much with energy efficiency. He's looking at reassessing the motion-sensored lights in the county facilities. So the technology 3 or 5 years ago wasn't that great. He was having to replace them fairly regularly or something like that, and they didn't always work in every situation. But I think that it's better now. They last longer, like the light bulbs do. And so that's another thing he's going to be working on. But I just wanted to throw this out there. So we don't have to do it overnight. We're thinking of, you know, really understanding this, laying out a process where programs can sign up, you know, that are interested in being those tests and pilot. I've got two examples of the new receptacles that they have with, you know, little things. We want to make it easier for the staff so they don't, the custodial staff aren't having to empty those every day. But it's really important that we don't commingle. I just am bringing this to your attention from a fiscal standpoint. And the board's attention as a program, I'd like their endorsement so that it's not Ryan saying, you know, planning, you're having a lot of commingled trash. That's not acceptable. That's cost to everybody. You know, Ryan can tell me, the board saying something, Ryan can tell me, Chair of Mission Walker saying something. Y'all just try harder at not doing that. We're trying to save you money.
Finance already, as an office, has a separate recycling for paper and cardboard. And, of course, we've got the recycled paper and cardboard out in the hallway there.
Yes.
So to a limited extent, we have that program already established. But the new program would be, I think you'll find a lot of support for that.
I hope these departments will have buy-in.
Yeah.
And it will take some of their, it'll take some effort on their part. But we've got new employees that haven't been oriented to this stuff. I think it's actually a pretty good project for the Wellness Committee in conjunction with HR that we, you know, and the board could dedicate September as National Recycle Month or something like that. And Republic is really interested in kind of making this a more robust thing in the county and then using us as an example for other municipalities to say they've stepped up, they've reduced their overall trash costs annually by $23,000.
That'll get some attention.
Right, yeah. And there's another potential custodial staff we could hire. That's what I'm looking at trying to do with this. But there's, you know, maybe this isn't that big a deal, but we're getting to low-hanging fruit is not what it used to be. It's not $600,000 grants for new, you know, heating and air conditioning systems in the Justice Building. It's the windows have been replaced, the new AC and heating units have been done. The other thing is capturing the water that we pump out every day, all summer long. Yeah. We could be irrigating with that as opposed to, you know, buying city water, paying for sewer when water never finds it into the sewer for irrigating all of our campus here. We're working on that too, getting a holding tank that we can pump for the system. So,
okay.
Yeah, those are the things that we're.
Well, I for one, am really big on recycling.
Yeah,
and I throw almost nothing in the trash.
Yeah,
almost nothing. You know, even my kids that come down from Portland, they kind of like, "Gee, Mom, what do you mean?
Don't throw
that in the trash."
No.
But I think it's really important because you're right. Most of our dealings are in paper.
And we've made good progress as a board. We've gone to electronic. We've really reduced on our paper consumption in this office. Yeah. But there's still more we could do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, great. We'll roll it out and we'll think of the next staff meeting. We'll kind of get, you know, we have five departments that are ready to sign up. We'll be giving assessment on how many receptacles we need and order those. They're going to be free of charge. They're donating them to us, the pilot project. So it seems like a win-win.
Do they have the only recycle bin that's out in the hallway?
I believe so.
Republic, yeah.
Yeah.
Because I know if I have paper in my car, even I come in and I dump it in that bin.
Yeah.
You know.
No, that's great.
Sometimes you'll accumulate, you know, papers on your windshield or receipts or whatever, and I put them in there and they recycle.
It's just really important that it's kind of clean and not commingled with trash.
Right. It has to be clean paper.
That paints the whole.
It has to be clean paper. Okay. I have one more thing before you leave.
Okay.
We had the request for Diane Hoover to be the health administrator for Curry County for 30 days. And I had some questions on that, and my questions were, do they expect for her to go over there, you know, to be working over there? And she said, no, maybe just some visits, you know, a couple of visits over, primarily looking for an administrator with public health experience. So someone probably just to review documents or sign things or whatever. And for how long? It's 1 month, and they're confident they don't have someone hired. They're in the process right now by September. And are they going to compensate? And she said yes, at the public health administrator rate. And so anyways, and of course I have an executive board decision. So my question to you is, since they're going to reimburse her at the public health administrator rate, but she's going to still be here, mm-hmm. how do we handle that with payroll? How do we do that? You know, because she'll still be here, be getting paid
right.
for doing her
right.
job, but she's going to be receiving
yeah.
pay from them as well.
There shouldn't be any issues whatsoever. We'll continue to pay her as our employee.
Okay.
But the reimbursement will just be deposited back to the public health program. And I think that's fine, both for salary, and if she happens to submit any travel reimbursement requests for mileage or those kinds of things, then we'll, you know, bill them and get reimbursed for those costs also.
Or maybe that's associated with the administrative rate.
Okay, so why don't I have Diane then talk to you about setting
sure.
that up, how you want
sure.
it documented
yeah.
and how you'd want it billed?
Right.
Because
fine.
It doesn't sound like it's going to be too onerous. It doesn't sound like it's going to take
no.
anything away from us.
Right.
We've done that before where we've had employees, the GIS with Jackson County and,
mm-hmm.
and even with the City of Grants Pass where we've had,
Okay, I will notify Diane, and then she'll have her get in touch with
yep,
you.
That'll work.
To know exactly, so you get the right documentation.
Perfect.
When yeah. Shepherd left, we mm-hmm. had a delay in replacing her because it was kind of sudden that she went.
Yeah.
And it was a while before we got a good application. So mm-hmm. in that interim, we used somebody at the state, and I just wonder if Curry County's investigated that as an option. And I'm saying, Diane really needs to tell me for a decision that time-wise, her job performance here isn't going to be negatively
right.
impacted.
Right.
She can do it all. What I feel is if I had three managers, it seemed like they've got a lot on their plate with animal control and public health,
yeah.
it would frankly be her. Sarah Wright was a new parks director in a very, very busy park season. You know, there are people who are just always at 100%.
Right.
And her involvement in all care, all of that stuff, seems like she's always running at 100%. So adding one more thing, if the alternatives haven't been explored, I think that would be the only thing that I could say. If that's not an option, then we want to be good to our neighbors. The other thing is that we're not very geographically contiguous to Curry County. Coos County makes a lot more sense,
mm-hmm.
in my opinion, geographically, or even Douglas County. We have to go through the canyon. It's right there, but it isn't right there.
Right.
You're going into another state to get there anyway. Maybe it's because she's so qualified that they've chosen to.
Well, that's why I asked the question, are they requesting that you work over there? And she said no. She said maybe a couple of visits. So
okay.
But mostly electronically, which these
yeah.
days that should
mm-hmm.
work pretty good.
Right. Okay.
Maybe those are more directed towards you, towards Diane, those questions, but...
Well, these are questions I posed to her, and then posed to her. I'll have her get in touch with you.
We're fine.
That is.
We can do it. We have IGAs with various and sundry folks all the time, intergovernmental
yeah.
agreements. So.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. Any other matters, Simon, from you?
I was just wondering if we have a draft of the economic development plan, and most of it looks fairly like what I think we were anticipating coming through. Is there a schedule for us to formally review? What I saw in there was that there was a preliminary schedule for you to review it, send your comments back to them, and they were going to present like a more final draft.
They haven't got the final one ready yet.
Both agencies.
I haven't received it yet.
Formally as boards and councils, we were going to.
But we did put our, we did send our input over, input from Julie and my own. And we also, as between agreement between the city and county, we reached out and had it reviewed by Crystal Reddy and Arby Cog, I think, also looked at it.
Okay.
And as well as, I can't think of the state agency.
Business Oregon,
I think, that looked at it. So so they had other people look at it besides us, the two parties that were involved in it. We've had other parties look at it, so they were collecting all those comments.
Okay.
And I haven't seen the final thing yet. It's not quite ready. So when it comes in, you'll get a copy. So.
Great. The urban area apparently passed first reading 4-2 last night. And... I don't know about the position of the Board of Commissioners. I understand that Mr. Reeves may have relayed to the council that I was in favor of the urban area agency.
Well, I got word that very day after he was here. I'd gone to another meeting, and they said, oh, yeah, some, you know, he came back and told everybody the commissioners were all on board. And we all said, you know, we all thought it was a great plan. And I'm going, that's not what we did. He asked us for feedback, and I said, yes, thank you for your great presentation, and as we can each individually give feedback. And so I did.
Right.
But I said, we didn't approve.
Yeah.
And another one, we don't have
to
approve.
But say that we endorsed
that we agreed
the idea.
Mm-mm.
We didn't.
We didn't do that as a board.
My position is that I think the concept is great, and I fully endorse the concept. But there are serious concerns about, and that we talked about those. I don't know that I need to reiterate, but that they have a lot of commercial property included in that, that's delineated and red up there. And those, by talking to Connie, I'm not an assessor, and I don't have to pretend to be one, she said that the potential for increasing the assessed value of commercial properties that are already developed is very low. And so if you're banking on that generating revenue, that's a tough one. And also obligating future councils, restricting future councils to only 7% of that bonding capacity total is kind of, it's almost rude, you know, for 30 years that they don't have that. I would have picked something closer to 50%. 12.5% of the bonding capacity. Focus in on those core infrastructure projects that you have to get done, water and sewer and transportation infrastructure, and leave maybe those nice-to-haves like the convention center to when you've got more of a, you don't even have a site. They don't have anything really out there figured out yet.
I have a theory about it. But
well, so do I. we're probably both very right in the assumption. The other thing was, this convention centers, when I thought about it, are predominantly outside of the Portland metro area, even Blaine County. We have our annual meeting, the AOC, at the Marriott, isn't it? Or the Hilton. Hilton property.
It's at the Hilton.
They're private enterprises outside of the Portland metropolitan area that doesn't, they're always in conjunction with a hotel. I can't think of one outside of Portland. So why would ours be publicly funded and not necessary? $18 million is what they had. That's a lot of money. You're building one for $18 million, in my opinion, with that price tag. So, or maybe that's just for the infrastructure to facilitate one coming in here, but that sounds really
absorbent. I don't know. Well, the comments that I submitted, I don't disagree with the concept or the type of program they're trying to put in place. But they took in all of 6th and 7th Street from north on the other side of the freeway all the way down to south of the 199. And then they took in all of the 199 and out to the out the parkway type, that mm-hmm. direction. So they took in, I drove in the other day from the south end, and I'm looking, I was like, what's blighted here? I mean, there's so much new construction and so many new things going on. You know, maybe off of the main areas, for instance, the Spalding Park itself and down in that area. I understand that, absolutely. They need that kind of a thing. But to take in this commercial and retail area along 6th and 7th, does it need some work? Yes. But what they were talking about is, well, you know, they need, you know, we need to do some facades and we need to do this and we need to help with some of these buildings. And I'm going, okay, so you take in the whole area.
Dollars to do that?
Well, the other thing is, too, is that you can paint it and facelift it all you want to, but it's not going to increase your tax rate. It's not going to increase your rate or your base or the revenue. It's not going to do anything to it.
It's not very fair to Redwood Motel, you know, who did it using your own dollars. Thank you very much. We just spent our own money to upgrade.
Well, they did.
You're going to pay.
But the increase in the revenue is going to go to the taxing district and not to the government entities. So, you know, they took in all that new development out there that's along the parkway.
Well, and I mentioned that some of those are going to qualify for the enterprise zone exemption.
Yes, they're exempt for 5 years.
They're going to be paying taxes for 5 years. So
right.
Is that, I'm sure that's included in their forecast for repayment on that.
Mm-hmm. And maybe that's why they made it 30 years instead of 20 years. I don't know. We weren't in on that.
I just saw
my concern, and I expressed this to them in my email. as well as to Susan Seerider when she asked me about it, is that I think that you've taken in so much area that is so spread out and so diverse with so many different needs that you'll never get all the projects done. I said, unless you hire extra staff to go in there to work on these projects, because you have retail, you have commercial, you have industrial, you have water, you have sewer. You know, it's, I think it's too big a bite. You know, I should have stayed with the industrial and the commercial out in 99 and Spalding. Because that seems to be where the growth is.
The water and sewer.
The water and sewer are critical for any of it.
Yeah.
And so if you've done, you know, water, focus sewer, streets, infrastructure.
The other thing is the urban growth boundary, which is frankly mostly a city project, but working with the county, because that's where it's coming from, took in excess of 5 years. We were a partner in that element at every step of the way. We're in a significantly impacted district within this urban area infrastructure finance thing. We were given this document on June 29th or something like that and asked to consult on the 13th of July. It's just like, that's less than 2 weeks to review something they've been working on for 4 years. All to rush and get this stuff done so the roles are set, you know, in October by Connie. Connie has never been asked, apparently, for an actual, well, what is your review of these assessment values and your prediction based on the projects and the, you know, the forecasting of them? She has some reservations that I think, I can't speak for her, but I think that she'd say that it was maybe a little optimistic, their revenue projections for repayment. So who knows assessment better than Connie in Josephine County? Nobody. She's it. You know, she can tell you chapter and verse. So I hope that they're going into this with their eyes wide open and not, because if you do it, if it doesn't work out well, the idea of a good concept of incremental financing for this stuff is going to have a negative, and you're going to, you're going to get another one. You know, people are going to be gun shy if it doesn't go well. So being very strategic and stuff. The last point I had was I talked to Sarah yesterday in our Parks Department, and there's a growing practice of nonprofits, philanthropic organizations, religious, faith-based organizations, even agencies, dropping off people who are disabled, either physically or mentally, in our Parks Department.
They're still doing that?
Yeah.
We've sent them letters. Doreen Ferguson sent them letters twice, each year, practically, each summer.
I think it would behoove the Parks Department and the county to probably host a meeting. Maybe that's you as the chair, maybe it's me as Parks Liaison, but calling in, you know, the mental health providers, some of the pastors, and Sarah, and legal, and the sheriff's department, and the police department, and saying, this is what just sending a letter isn't working. We need to have everybody at the table and say, what is your practice? How can we help you? But you can't just put the burden on the Parks Department.
I'd like to know what agencies are doing it, because if it's the same repeater, you know, offenders, for lack of a better word, that we were dealing with last year, and the year before, and the year before that.
Right.
If it's the same ones, then I think they need to be
brought to the table.
Because I have talked to some other social service type agencies, and they don't do that.
No.
You know, they don't. That's not the responsible thing to do for the person.
Client.
No.
I mean, not in their best interest.
So
if Sarah
could find out who those are, I think those are the ones we need to get in here first, because it's my hunch, because if they are a responsible organization that is concerned about the people, they're not going to take these people out there and dump them off.
No.
And, you know, maybe they have some, and for lack of a better word, maybe some do-gooders of some kind that are working at some of these agencies, and maybe the agencies don't know that's what
possible.
They're doing.
Somebody's just, like, paying extra night for them to stay and then calling it good. And it's like, no, that's not, we are not staffed in our parks.
Yeah, so would you talk to Sarah and find out if she knows, like, if she could find out more detail on it as to, you know, what types of people are, you know, like, case documentation.
Yeah.
What types of people are they? Men, women, families, children. Are they people with mental health issues? Who is putting them in there for how long? Those, if we had some more data, And then to get, I have a hunch that it's probably not most of the mainstream.
I don't think it's the agencies.
No, it's not going to be the agencies. I think it might be some of the
philanthropic and faith-based
right
programs.
I have a hunch that's what it is.
Okay, I'll look into that.
Because if it were any of the mainstream publicly supported agencies, they'd be shut down in a heartbeat and lose their license.
It seems like that's really not responsible. And we want to help for these people, that's for sure. But we're not staffed in our Parks Department to handle this. And it's having a negative impact on the tourists that come to utilize our facilities that they're not adequately staffed for this. Mm-hmm. But there's no way we could. We don't.
Yeah.
That's not in their wheelhouse to handle people.
We aren't able to do that.
Okay.
It's a shame.
That's all I have.
All right.
Really good meeting today.
I don't have anything else, and we are adjourned at 10:34.